them all. Step right up, step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast is on its way. Episode number 131. Howdy, everybody. Portal Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. And it's a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. Check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. I am your host, The Brant, and I'm super excited everybody can hear because we have with us...
your co-host, Brian.
Woohoo! Awesome. We are here on an afternoon, Brian.
I know, it's strange.
This is crazy. We are recording on an afternoon. We just finished playing a game of Pipeline from Capstone Games. What'd you think of that one, Brian?
Yeah, no, it was really fun. I mean, first play, definitely getting the kinks out, trying to figure out the puzzle. But, you know, you were high on it, and I think it lived up to those expectations.
Oh, good. Nice. So it's very mathy.
Yeah.
And I've played it well until this time.
No, yeah, it looks very dry, but I guess it's in that same sense of, like, you're trying to figure out what you're trying to accomplish with it, right? So it's like there's a lot that's going on, like, based on when you're trying to buy and sell, and, you know, I guess that doesn't need a ton of, like, you know, aesthetic tacked on.
Cool.
Though it's a great presentation for it.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, the board looks a little bit drier compared to the box,
right,
in terms of all that and whatnot. But, yeah, I talked about it a few episodes ago.
So that's all we need to say.
No, that's, and talked really about good. Playing it on the Dice Tower Con episode. So
Capstone has a great game there. So, yeah, check out Pipeline. I'm sure we've got a few copies at the store still because we backed it. It was one of the Kickstarter ones that we backed, I believe, right?
Yep.
That was the Kickstarter one that was going on. So, yeah, I'm excited. I'm glad we did it. And, you know, hopefully it'll just get some more attention.
Watch this segue. Ready? So we're going to talk about goals and expectations at Gen Con, why we're going. And I'm working at the Capstone Games booth at Gen Con teaching Watergate. How about that? So we're talking about Pipeline and Capstone. Aaron talking about Gen Con. Put the two together. So there's that. Summertime. So Frisbee, you're in the midst of getting a house.
Hopefully, yeah. I guess that's the plan.
Or housing.
Trying to.
Of some sort. And just getting some games in on some week.
Trying to play nights. Throughout, yeah.
Yeah, that's what we're doing.
It opens it up a little bit, but yeah, like you said, Frisbee definitely shifts. Like, it's kind of full swing right now, like three nights a week, just trying to to play some, you know, I don't know. I guess that's just, it's good to get out while there's good weather, right?
Right. I'm playing one of those nights a week,
yeah.
So be good. All right, we'll just roll in. So this episode, we're going to go through a bunch of games we've played. We're actually in a strange spot, I am at least, that I played more than I can talk about in an episode.
Right, yeah, we were going through the list. Obviously, mine aren't as expansive, but...
So we're just going to kind of roll through some things, and there's more to come, but we're going to make this episode a little bit heavier on that end. And then, as I said, we're just going to talk about, we're headed to Gen Con. We're not going to go over games of Gen Con. We may do an episode on that, we may not. It's like everybody does that, and I think it's great because it's fun, and if you're going to be there, it's exciting. If you're not going to be there, then it's just like another episode of people talking about games that I'm not going to be able to play for a little while, but... The turnaround time is different. In fact, what we should do at some point is mention games that are at Gen Con that'll be in retail within a month. Because that could be helpful for people to know.
Except knowing that.
Yeah, knowing that. That's true. We could report that and then be totally wrong. So, cool. Let's talk about some games we played. We're going to go a little bit back here. We played Trade on the Tigris. So this is a Tasty Minstrel game from Jeff Engelstein and Ryan Sturm, who are the original two... co-hosts of the Ludology podcast, and they kind of made this game Trading in the Mediterranean as kind of a jab at Tom Vassell, and now, like, 6-7 years later, it came out last year, I believe, in 2018, and we got a chance to play it. So this is just a trading game. I mean, it almost feels like Pit, where you're just like, I need this, who needs that, what's this, that, not quite shouting levels. But there's that. But I think the other structures of the game are what make it good. Like, it really is like a Civ game and an engine build game.
Mm-hmm.
So you're basically getting the, you know, you've got your little civilization that tells you how many trading cards you're going to draw, and then you have a religion and a government. And they let you draw upgrade cards at the beginning of every round. I believe it was 5 rounds. Brian's looking at me
like it.
You remember better than me. And so at the beginning of each one, you get to draw to, like, add those upgrades. So you get unique upgrades. I feel those decks are unique. And those even tier. There's, like, a level 1, level 2, level 3 of each, like, religion track. And they go in opposite directions.
Right.
So, like, government could be... Is it anarchy and democracy? Can't be anarchy.
No. It was something different.
Yeah. Dictatorship and democracy. Yeah, and then
the other two were just two, like, made-up religions.
Gods, yeah.
Yeah.
And so that part, I feel like, is where the game really is. The trading is interesting, and it's very direct.
Really made up?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So I would compare it to Sidereal Confluence, but the major difference is this one's shorter, and your objectives are much clearer why you're trading. I'm going to trade to get this many points, and points are what win the game. Sidereal Confluence, for people to know, is like this space trading game where I'm making widgets and Brian's making gizmos.
That
and
one, everyone
we're trying
starts
to figure out what it's worth it.
In Trade on the Tigris, everyone's kind of starting out in a similar footing.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, at the very beginning of the game, it doesn't really even feel like it's going to progress. Like, it didn't look like it was going to change much from round to round from the initial, like, this is all I have, this is all I can do. But then it very quickly escalates, and once people start advancing on the different tracks and whatnot, like, now they're gaining benefits that are unique to them, and they're turning themselves into a special, separate thing. So it does get to a point where you're, like, valuing things differently than other people, which is really, that's when it starts getting the flow down, right?
Right.
Which is cool. Like, that's the enjoying part, where, like, it's awesome to just figure out where you are and what you're trying to accomplish, and, you know, like, whatever you have in front of you is what you've got available to try to make the best do that you can with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I really enjoyed it. So my one major complaint was our end game scores were pretty separate. You actually have them in front of you.
Yep.
So it's like 130, 110, one, like, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, like, they were in, like, the around the 70s for a couple people, and then you got to, like, 101, and then I was at 133. And I don't think we were, like, seeing that mid-game as much, and then it just kind of was like, oh, what are all our scores? And it just got out of hand. And obviously, like, first play, you know, people might not know exactly what what makes sense, or I know we both had some sort of objective every round as to how much we were trying to, like, how much we were trying to accomplish.
Right.
And, you know, you don't know if that's going to be the same recognition immediately for everyone else, but I think it was funny looking at the two tracks, right? Most people were on one side on each. Like they, most people were on whatever democracy and one of the, like, the blue God, and then I was, like, completely all the way on opposite, the other end, which probably helped just being different separate enough to, like, you know, now I want all the stuff that you don't want. So that probably helped a bit on my end.
Right.
And just it seemed like getting up those tracks was pretty key to like to get benefits. So
agreed. Yeah, but I thought it was a pretty good Euro trading blend. I mean, very much in the way that Catan is. There's more like Euro game and less trade in Catan. This is way more trade and less Euro, but I thought it was a great mix. I really enjoyed the game. The fact that it plays with six, like, this is a solid strategy game that plays with six.
Yeah.
Because the time frame is the same. Because really, after the first round, even though people weren't sure how to trade, they knew what to do. They weren't really confused as to what to do, so we could just play simultaneous.
Yeah.
And that was nice. So rounds. We also didn't play with a timer. I think it's a 5-minute trading timer, and we just let people run out, which was pretty much 5 minutes every time.
Yeah, so there might have been some that
groups
pushed
would prefer down that to, like, 3, 2, 1, it's over, you know?
Well, it gets to that point if, like, you're really trying to hold out on, or, like, you know, like, if you try to get into a bidding war every time you've got something that you're trying to trade, like, that's kind of where it gets difficult. And you have to go into this type of game with that somewhat open attitude, because to actually resolve stuff, you might need to just say, I'll trade this for this to one person, and just ignore the rest of the table, like what they're trying to do. Because if you went and said, I'm trying to trade this to each single person, yeah, now all of a sudden it bogs down completely.
Right, right.
And, you know, like some of it too is just getting your trade in before other people can kind of evaluate that.
Yeah.
And analyze exactly what you're
Although there is an element to that. Like, right. That is, like, you could say, oh, that's unfair, everybody should know everything, but that's not really...
Right.
There's an element of a sales pitch, right? Yeah. Like, oh, just give me this now, I'll give this to you, don't worry about what everybody else says, this is exactly what you want, boom, make the trade, right?
But that can be pretty polarizing, I think. Yeah, I feel like true. Some people can be very off-put by that.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
And it can get very, like, negative, but if people are all just happy with that, like, I know... You know, I guess there's definitely a split. There are people that I would not play it with, and there are people that just will have fun no matter what happens.
Yeah.
And if that's your attitude, that's great. That's kind of what this game is aimed toward. I haven't tried any of those other, like, Mega Civ or...
Oh, right.
You know, like, in my mind, that's kind of a... That would be a stepping stone, but I need to try those other ones before... Have you played any of those?
No. Yeah, that's an interesting stepping stone. But yeah, I see what you're saying. It kind of opens you up to that.
It always, whenever I watch, like, a playthrough on those, it seems like it's a kind of that same idea, but, you know, I guess it was fun, so maybe one of those other ones would be enjoyable, too.
I do want to move on, but I do want to say one more thing that I forgot. One part I really liked in the game, where there were cards that gave you upgrades, mm-hmm. where that you produced something that you couldn't keep, that you could only trade away. So, like, I got a card that was like, oh, power to the people or something, and it was a democracy card,
right.
And I could trade it to somebody and they could increase their democracy, but if I held it, it wasn't a benefit to me.
Right.
That was great.
Yeah, you're just spreading your influence.
It just encouraged you to trade. Mm-hmm. That was awesome. So, and it was something unique that I had that nobody else had.
Yeah.
Cool. Next up.
So we played Steamrollers by Stronghold Games. Who's
Mark Garrett's?
Okay, so it was a little ways away, but it's a roll and write train game in a sense, right?
Yeah.
So you're trying to go through and, I don't know, I guess you're bringing, delivering cubes from one town to another, and you're trying to connect train routes to do all that stuff. The neat thing is every round, like, you roll a bunch of dice, like what the first player does. They pick one of those, right? Is that how it goes? They pick one, and whatever it does, like, it tells you kind of where you can put the train route or what you can trade or all that sort of stuff. So it's roll the dice, pick one, and then pass. So those dice go around, and people have choices based on what that happens. And you're all trying to compete over these resources that are on the board as well as these public objectives. And, you know, there's definitely a lot that's kind of going into those decisions, which is neat, but... It plays really, really quickly, and it's got that same sort of feel as like an Age of Steam or something like that, where it's kind of that, but boiled down to just creating those links and trading stuff instead of building out this expansive network. It's a quick version of that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's really neat because it is a roll and write, but it doesn't really inherently feel one. Like, it feels like a board game.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like I'm trying to move these things, and what I'm writing is just... an element of creating my structure to get there. Yeah. I'm not scoring off of what I'm writing, like, directly. It's not really like a puzzle. Like, a lot of the Roman writes are just, oh, mark this box, X that box, dot this, cross that. And it's definitely thinky. And it's definitely, like, it's not really cutthroat because of the length of the game, right? The, like, 30 to 45 minute nature is like, oh, you got that cube right before me. I'll go get this cube. So it's not hard, but it is. It's, like, all about who gets that cube and this cube. And, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I thought it was great. I thought the upgrades were neat. It's double-sided. I have played every time with the, like, little contracts that say, oh, if you collect this color cube, you get that. Because that gives you, like, a goal to work towards. I have seen, like, whoever gets, like, one more of those than everybody else seems to, but kind of the point of them,
right?
To go for them. So I think they're worth it. I can't remember. Oh, the only other module that we haven't played with, and I've played several times, and solo was really good. Solo's totally different. And they did a good job with it. It wasn't just like, oh, we'll just simulate. Like, it gives you goals. Was we didn't play with those player powers. You, like, draft player powers, but...
Yeah, I mean,
They're small. They're like, oh, start with one here, start with one here, build a track. Like, they're not as big a deal, so...
Was it just the... You avoided it for that learning game for three people out of the four?
I think so.
You haven't played with it at all?
No, I haven't played with that one. Yeah. Hmm.
But it's a good size, like, it's a good size game, and it's got that, like, heavy filler sort of mentality, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't take long, but there's value going into what you're doing.
Right.
So.
To me, the other thing is, we're talking about it a year plus after it came out, but I feel like it's a game to go back to. Like, I would tell people, oh yeah, that one's worth going back and checking it out. It's solid, it's there, but, you know, it's probably going to favor, like you said, people that want a little bit more of a thinky right. style game. Like, don't think of it as a roll and write in my mind, even though it is. Right.
Well, it's not like one of those, mechanism, like...
but not the, like, weight of it.
It doesn't feel like it's light enough to just take off, like Welcome To, or,
right.
you know, like stuff like that, where it's just, this is accessible to every single person that picks it up, right? And just... play it real quick, like, you just basically know it from how you're playing the game and figuring it out. But, you know, when you're getting into the gamer mentality, like, I feel like that's kind of where that hits its stride. So, yeah, it was good. I mean, I'm glad that, yeah, we got it to the table.
Nice. Cool. All right. I am really excited for this game. So this, Larry taught me this game. And it's Batman the Animated Series, Gotham City Under Siege. So it's Richard Lanius and Michael Gugliano. And it's from IDW Games. And this is a co-op Batman game based on the animated series, which I'm realizing must have had a decently short span. Because it was kind of like right in a wheelhouse for me. I remember watching this show. But I'm guessing it only was like 3 or 4 years that it was on TV. I'm not sure. And right in my age, I don't know, I think it was when I was in middle schoolish, in terms of all that. The most famous thing from this, usually going forward, is that Mark Hamill played the Joker in this, Mark Hamill being Luke Skywalker in Star Wars. So, anyway, so that's a co-op game. It's really light, it's a dice rolling game, I don't know. Like, there's a lot of elements to it that just make it seem like, pass. I guess it's an IP-based game. But I played it with Larry. I loved it. Like, it was just such a blast. It has everything I want in that style game. So the dice rolling is roll all your dice. Like, you may have 4, 5, 6 of them. And then assign one. And then everybody does that. And then you re-roll again and assign another one. And I really like that element because it's basically you're not just stuck at whatever the dice roll. There's a ton of manipulation of the dice, or mitigation, and everybody has, like, unique powers. There's a lot. It's like you get 2 powers at the start of the round, which are called acts, and there's 4 acts. You're trying to save Gotham from being destroyed, either citizens being killed, or buildings blowing up, or you just dying. You get wounded, and then you're dead. That's how it goes, although you can't heal. Not from dead. And so you get like 2 player power cards you get to pick. Then you got a whole bunch of powers. Then you roll dice, which give you a whole bunch of powers. And then the game itself, you flip a card and it tells you put this many mastermind villains out. You draw all these villains from a bag. There's like 60 tokens for henchmen and thugs and ninjas that come out. And there's a bunch of story cards that can kind of affect you and have negative things if you don't deal with them. Dealing with them is very simple. Mm-hmm. This one needs a 3, 4, and a 5 on it. And people have to place them on there. So that's not... thematic in that sense, but your attacking powers are very thematic. Batman swoops in and takes out the head villain and then grabs a stack of thugs and throws half of them into, you know what I mean, whatever.
I don't remember that happening.
A stack of thugs. It's classic. Anyway, that felt more thematic for sure. So I got a chance to play it 2 with Larry, and then we played it 5 just the other night. And it definitely got convoluted at 5. Like, there's too many cards coming out, too many villains, too many things, and too many abilities for everybody to, like, go through and parse out what their best choice was.
Right.
But I think with the group we played with, it worked nicely because people were cool with just saying, I'm going to do this, or let me help you. This is the ability I have. Who can I help with this? And we were very vocal about doing that. And I felt like that kept the game moving, kept people engaged. And it was still enjoyable at five, even though I would prefer like a 2-3 player count, I think. I mean, I haven't played it at 3 and 4, so I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, with five, it was definitely, like, it felt kind of a little rough, like, at the beginning of every age where it's trying to set up all the villains. Like, it was at that point where the amount of stuff that we were adding to the game felt a little absurd. Like, it seemed like there was something that we were doing wrong, right? Even though from all the cards that came out, like, we were doing the right setup and all that sort of stuff. Like, it felt like there were so many things being added that it was just absurd. Like, you know, how is this, how are there still tiles that are coming out? How are there still villains that are going to appear? You know, like, I guess just the quantity was, you know, was very overwhelming at first. And then quickly you go through that stuff. So it's not like to the point where you can't deal with any of it. But it, you know, it was a lot of setup between, between ages. But, you know, the gameplay was really easy just to kind of go through. It was fun to just see what your character could do and try to maximize that benefit. You know, and basically kind of, I guess, the character, I was like, what's his name?
Yeah.
Now it's blanking.
The police. Commissioner Gordon.
Commissioner Gordon and the police for, yeah, like, it was basically, my path was kind of dictated by my special story card or whatever. Every round kind of gave me like one way to try to either attack villains or go to story cards and try to resolve those. So it kind of gave me a clear, a clear cut path there. And I guess I don't know for everyone else. Like it's one that you have to kind of bounce around and try a different characters and see if there's like, you know, see how that play goes through. But yeah, no, it was definitely like a, I'm glad it plays five, even though it's not
the best count.
The best count. Right. But it's fun to just play with five when you have that number.
Right. And so this is a true Amera trash style game. And I know I like that style of game, but I've had some struggles finding ones that I like. And this is one because just, I mean, it really is true when you just, oh, I got three dice, please roll a six. You roll a six and people just start high-fiving around the table. That's the fun of dice. That's the fun of co-op. That's the fun of something that's a little bit more story and a little less strategic. Because it's just, oh, can we do this? And it feels like a movie moment, you know, right, or a TV moment or whatever. And it is. It's breezy. There's not too much. You're not reading all this flavor text to people, you know, in terms of all that, which can be fine because that can be very immersive, but it can just also be slow. Everybody's not there. I think those story cards are probably that and the putting, like, Josh had to put like 50 villains out at a time. It was a little overwhelming, but it's cool because it makes these stacks of like 12 that you're like, we got to take them out, you know? And so people kind of go after because it looks, you know, like a big deal. It's got these like paper cardboard buildings that go in the center. They don't do anything, but they get destroyed. So they come out and then there's a card underneath that's randomized that you flip that blows stuff up. So it's just a cool little element. Like it looks like you're, you know, sitting amongst the city.
The presentation is good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's there. And all that. So yeah, I really like it. I played it solo as well the other night. And, that's what I'm looking for. Now, if you have no love for Batman or never watched this cartoon or you can't stand dice in games and co-ops are just okay, don't go near this game. So you got to have something that you're seeking with this game, right. I think, too. Or somebody who's pushing it excitedly like I was.
Yeah, but you also, I mean, we got down to basically what amounted to four die rolls like to win the game. And that was a good progression. Like it felt like it was just, it all hinged on a couple things. And then Josh messed it up. So.
Nice. And then we all picked on it. And I saw Richard Launius at Dice Tower Con. And I told him that I really liked this game. And he said there's an expansion in the works.
Yeah.
So that'll be cool. I'll be interested to see what they add.
Maybe go to six.
A six character in terms of that. Cool.
Oh, you're putting this in front of us. So Point Salad from AEG is one of their upcoming games. We got an advanced copy. So that's, you know, we get to show it off, play it, and try it out beforehand. So, It's a really quick, this is another filler game that takes like 15 to 30 minutes, it says on the box. So you can play it really quickly. It goes 2 to 6. Basically, there's a deck of 108 cards. All of them have one of 6 different vegetables on one side. And on the other side, it gives you an object, like a scoring, like a point scoring thing. Like it tells you what you can score. Maybe like pairs of, like a carrot and a cabbage or something, like those go together and get you maybe 5 points. So it tells you that on one side, and then on the other side, like I said, there's a vegetable. So you'll go through, you shuffle it up, divide the deck into like three stacks, and then flip the backs of the cards are the point scoring values.
Right.
And then you flip the like 2 cards on each stack over, and those show vegetables now. So now there's like a column of 2 vegetables, and on top of that is the deck of cards with the top point card visible. So that's got 3 columns like that. It goes around. On your turn, you can pick up 2 of the vegetables in a column, or you can take the top card of any of those decks and basically keep. So if you get the vegetables, you keep those in front of you, and you just build up your vegetables. You're adding to your salad. If you get the point card, you take that in front of you, and you can score based on that. Like, you get that point scoring card for the end of the game. So most of them are tied into like having specific iterations, or having the most of certain things, or having the least of something. But you just go through, as soon as all the cards have been taken, then the game ends and you just score based on what you've got. And it plays really quickly. It seems like it's got some good decisions just based on trying to see like what other people are doing and going through. I know we added a 7th person, even though it goes right to 6. So it did get to the point where you're watching one card hoping that stays, but you know, it never does. Yeah. People always take cards from that that pile and it goes through. But yeah, I think it's great. Like it just takes like a play to kind of get that system. Like it doesn't even take a full play. You can just sit down and start grabbing vegetables and it's fun.
Yeah, I mean, you just put it best. Your line, it works.
Mm-hmm.
Like the game just works. It's light, it's simple, you know exactly what you're doing, but it's just fun. It just goes, and it doesn't overstay its welcome.
Right.
30 minutes would be super long for this game.
Like, yeah, I think it's
like maybe 2 player, like extreme head-to-head.
Where now it's a min-max game.
I guess. So, yeah. But it's just a really fun filler. That player count up to 6 is great. 7 if you want to just play it imbalanced like we did. In terms of all that. So, AEG just does a good job. They just find these games and they box them, and they know how to get them out there, and they get them out to stores and reviewers and people. So, you get to see it and you get to try it, and then you just realize, boy, this is just fun. Like, it's just fun in a box. I mean, Space is very much that way. Right? That they had. It's just fun in a box. Like,
yeah, I hope this one takes off for them, because it's just, it is such a good, like, in that category, like, it works, I guess. Yeah.
Because they have awesome expansions, you know, Greek salad, Caesar salad, the olive expansion, seafood salad, you know, it'd be great. So
they don't expand their games at all, though. AEG.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they made Smash Up, and then they made, like, no expansions for it. That was weird.
So,
nice. All right, we're going to do one more game here. This is Tales of Glory from Ankama, and I got this from Luma. So Luma is the distributor in Canada that's bringing this game, or like, publisher, distributor that's bringing this game through into North America. And got a copy of this at Dice Tower Con, so I want to thank them. And Tales of Glory is, Tales of Glory is a game where it's a tile drafting game where you're telling the tale of your hero. So everybody starts with a hero tile that's on their board, and then you have potions, and you have coins, and you have strength, and you have magic ability. And they all start different, and then there's 8 tiles out on the board, and everybody picks a card, 1 through 8, and it's which tile they want to draft. You flip a card, and you draft that tile. Now, if 2 people pick the same, then the first person gets it, and the second player has to go back and pick a different tile kind of later in that drafting round. Then everybody takes that tile and attaches it somewhere on their board. Some can't be attached on all sides, some form a key when you put the two pieces together. If you get a key, you could unlock a treasure chest. So tiles will have a treasure chest that says you don't get these resources until you unlock the treasure chest. That's the idea. And you're drafting the tiles. The tiles are locations you can explore, they're enemies you can defeat, allies you can add to your party, and items, weapons that you can use now. And those are the four different types. And they have a cost associated with them, so sometimes they cost money. Sometimes you just have to meet the threshold of you have to be this strong or be this magical, in which case you can use potions to increase yours temporarily. You go through, you play 10 rounds, so you have a whole bunch of tiles out on the board, and then everybody kind of adds up their score. You're actually mostly getting it as you go. It's glory. And you get these crowns as you're going, and then there's just a little bit of endgame scoring. Like some of the allies say, oh, get 2 points for every enemy you slay this game, or whatever. In addition, there's a little variant expansion, which I would suggest for gamers at all times, which has three like quest tiles that you get, and then you discard one. You have two of those, and you can play those anytime to add to your tableau and kind of build your tableau out and do other things. And that, to me, is basically a must because it's so simple and it gives you goals, which is nice. It's really fun. It was family weight, but we played it with gamers and it was enjoyable. Definitely doesn't overstay its welcome. You know, it knows exactly where that time is. And and Brian looks slightly different on it, which is cool. What do you think?
Yeah, it was fine, I guess. I mean, it wasn't one that I want to... I don't need to own it. I don't think I'd... I wouldn't ask to play it specifically. You know, it was all right. I think with... Maybe we played with five. I wonder how it can go, what, 2 to 5 or something? I don't know. I wonder if a lower count would be a little easier to just... Like you're... Yeah. I didn't feel like it was at a point where... I don't know. Like, I guess some games are fine like that, where you're playing to optimize your own thing. Like, there wasn't a ton of interaction in this game. Obviously, picking the tiles was something, and then trying to get majorities of different things.
Right.
Like, at the end of the game. But at the same point, like, I was never really focused on what other people were doing. And, you know, often I like that, but this one just didn't really... I don't know. It didn't seem to have that same flow, or I don't know. Like it wasn't. I don't know. Maybe like a lower count would change that, where you can kind of look around and do a little bit of figuring out what other people are going for, and you know, and try to get stuff that way. But I don't know. It was all right. Like I think the drafting of the tiles, like. That was, like, you could, with five, there are 8 tiles out, right?
Yeah.
And it can very
most
easily
rounds,
happen.
2 people are picking this.
Yeah, thing. And I think that's just, like, I don't think everyone's kind of deciding based on, I think I was just picking tiles based on, like, what could work in progression, right? And if other people just randomly say, oh, that one seems all right,
yeah,
I'll take that one, and it's, like, huge for you. Instead, like, it's just, I didn't think there were... all that many times where it was like...
What if 5 players, there were 5 tiles? Do you think that would be way too? Because then you just get left with something that just doesn't work for your strategy at all.
Right. I mean, I guess that's kind of in... Like, Viceroy was in a way like that,
that's
right?
True, yeah. I clearly
maybe it's
need
just
this
that
one
sort of type... Other, maybe that type of game just doesn't work for me.
Yeah. So I think though, what you said, I agree with. I don't think I would want... How did you say it? Would want to play this game, but I would suggest to play this game. So where would I suggest it? At the store with a group of people, at like the board game or the library, board game library. What is that called? I'm calling it
Silk
board
City
game library.
Board game.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. At the Silk City board game group, that would be a good spot. I would feel like to play this with families. I think with kids, this is something you could run through, you know, maybe if they were younger, mom or dad are on the team. So I think it's good there. I like the production. I like the tiles. I like the art. All that kind of stuff I think engages people, that it's kind of that, oh, we're fighting these things and going out there. But in terms of like being a strategy game, I don't think it's trying. I think it's trying to be a family game.
Right.
And so I think that's, you know, it's kind of knowing the audience of that. So I would suggest it knowing the audience. But I probably wouldn't play it, you know, like, ooh, let's get gamers together and play this game, or let's make this the focus of a night. Who wants to come over and play this? You know,
right?
It wouldn't make sense to me on that front. So,
Does steamrollers go to five?
Yeah.
Okay. So we did all five or more.
Oh, did we?
Didn't we?
That's awesome. Yeah.
So, yeah, because there are... So this would, like, Tales of Glory would be the bottom on my, on the list for me out of all those. For what that's worth. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree too.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess the other games are...
But to me, it's still a good game.
Yeah, it wasn't like... It wasn't...
It's not a bad game. It's not inherently flawed.
I didn't
it's not
dislike my... My time at the table. But, yeah.
How would you rate the people you played with? Okay, moving on. Nice. So there's that. We had one four-player game we were going to talk about, but I think we'll wait to talk about that one another time, because it just doesn't
fit. Did we spoil the space?
Space Explorers, yeah. So we'll talk about that. Alright, so...
Still at the bottom of my list.
That's... That's what's on our table. Let us know what's on yours. You can email us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. All right, so for our discussion topic today, we're not going to go over the games of Gen Con. We may do that, as we said, but there's a lot of places you can go for that. We will certainly talk about all the games we played at Gen Con on our now famous post Gen Con wrap-up. I've got a lot of people that have told me they've listened to that, and they really enjoy that, because it's just banter. I mean, it's just, oh! I mean, Larry jumps in, I want to talk about this game, right? Like, it's just, there isn't really a lot of flow in terms of that. So if you haven't listened to those episodes before, they're really fun. So you can check that one out in early August when we get back from Gen Con. I try to put it out, like, the next day, because we record on the way home when we're tired, we're run down, we got 14 hours ahead of us. What better to do than record a podcast when we're in a delirious state? And it's pretty fun. So that'll be coming at you again this year. So we want to talk about kind of our goals and objectives and expectations, kind of reasons. Why would a store send three people to Gen Con? You know, what does that do? What are we looking for? And I really aim this a little bit more towards Brian, because he's kind of the person behind all that.
Yeah, I guess the easy in, like, you know, initially, like, the trade day that starts it off is good. I mean, it's not, you know, I guess it doesn't completely make the the right con or anything, but it's good to just kind of sit down, be with like-minded people, try to, like, learn a little bit of what other people are trying to accomplish with either their stores or their communities or groups or whatnot. So that helps. And then at the end of the day, there's also the publishers that come in and present a few things just with their goals for the year, what they're trying to bring to the table, and, you know, just how they're trying to help us. So that always seems to be a solid one. I know last year, was that the, like, demo night was actually really solid to kind of walk through and try a bunch of stuff. I felt like that was a good demo night.
Yeah, you got, like, a ticket.
Yeah.
Like, it was really busy, but it was still worked, yeah.
But you just kind of walk through, and it gets to the point, too, where you're seeing the same people that you've built those relationships up with. So now, like, you can kind of sit down, and there's a little bit more of that ease of, like, okay, I know... You know, maybe they'll even kind of present something as, like, this is something that's going to be good for you guys, or, you know, this should work. So there is a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get through, but some of that too is just trying to see what games we think would make sense to bring back and really invest in, like, as a store. I know that's a tough thing to to figure out anyway. So anything helps just to try to figure it out and see, will this work for our clientele or our community? And do we think, like, how can we get this one to the hands of the people that we know would like it?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's kind of with that, like, that demo night. Plus, the rest of the con is kind of in that same boat, too, where we're trying to get the stuff that people are rushing over to get ahead of the curve on, and, you know, what the publishers are bringing out, like, in full force, and what they're promoting. And, you know, every now and then we'll try to talk to someone about bringing in, like, some copies that we can't get through distribution. Now, like, again, there isn't a ton of stuff that's like that these days. Like, it feels like distribution's opened up to quite a few publishers, so there might be a couple that that come to mind. But for the most part, it's just kind of walking through, getting the sense of that, like, what's coming out, how can we use this, and what makes sense for us. So, I don't know if that's kind of where you were you were thinking too. I know you have a different mode. You're kind of going based on the podcast a lot.
Right, I have separated.
Yeah.
So I don't even do trade day anymore.
Right.
Because that's just not a thing. For me, I'm better off on Wednesday to be in the hall, mm-hmm. to be talking to people, making that. So I'm really there networking. I'm picking up review copies. I'm purchasing games that we feel like would be good for us to have. I'm purchasing games that you and Larry and I want, just personally, because, I mean, we definitely were there for 6 days. There's right. definitely an element of, this is fun for us.
Yeah.
Or at least exciting for us, you know, in terms of all that. It gets a little long. But yeah, it's store-wise, I'm mostly focused on podcasts, so it's me with people. This year, I'm working at Capstone, which is just a great way to make a connection. You know, we really like Clay. We really like Capstone games, so it's a good spot to kind of be, and
right.
people know where I am, and just getting to know more people, you know, is part of the idea in whatever fashion. That's not even like with a hidden agenda. Like, oh, let me know more people so I can get more things. That's not the goal. Just let me know more people because this is a fun hobby and this will benefit us. And maybe these are people we get to come to the store. Maybe these are people that we can, you know, back their Kickstarters or whatever it is. We just get to know them. It's not.
Yeah.
You know, well, it's anything.
I think you see like otherwise. The gaming community is just, it's a great atmosphere. Like, you know, 99% of the people that are involved in the hobby mm-hmm. just have that, like, a great attitude on that community. And I think the same goes, like, publishers are a part of that community.
Yes.
Like, publishers, like, it doesn't make sense to become a publisher to
right.
make financial ends meet.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll happen. Maybe that's the case for, like, one in every 10 or something like that. But for the most part, people that are there that are selling games to us are people that are playing games themselves. And I think you feel that once you've kind of been talking to people and, you know, and we're trying to, like, go as a business and do things that way and make it so there's the business relationship, but it also goes beyond that.
Right.
And I think, too, like, there's, you know, just seeing, there are a few different ways that we can bring stuff into the store, right? I think Kickstarter is one. There's also distribution, which is the biggest that, you know, like, that's where we get most of our stock. And then we can order direct from
right.
from companies. Now, Kickstarter is great. That's kind of just like that flash in the pan sort of like, hey, we're just going to do this, commit to it, and get it when it comes out.
Right.
And, you know, you're kind of, you know, putting a little bit out there ahead of the game, just trying to get it in. Distribution is kind of more that spot stuff. Like, we're, if we sell something, we'll bring in a replacement for it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most of the time we also pre-order stuff through distribution because, you know, quantities can vary. Like, you don't have to do, like, the same sort of thing. Like, most publishers, when you're bringing in stock from them, they have, like, a minimum typically where you're trying to get to get free freight or something like that. Distribution, it's easier to get to that freight level just by mixing
right,
a bunch of things in. And oftentimes, publishers are also going to say, you know, you need to bring in, like, a full case of this, which in the board game community, it's, you know, it might be, like, 4 or 6 copies of the game, but with the amount of games that are coming out,
yeah,
now you're talking
shelving all those.
Yeah, if, like, 6 games come out a week, 36 games that
right.
you don't know if they're good or bad or how people have bought them already or if they're going to buy them. Like, that's a bigger commitment than just, hey, I'll bring in one of each. And now you've got 6 that are sitting on your table, your
right.
shelf.
Right.
So, I don't know. I guess that's kind of where you can, like, Gen Con's a good place to go and talk to the publishers and see if there is, like, a reason to order directly from them or if there are games that they think are going to do well. Where now we might say, you know, hey, we'll bring in 2 cases of this game to get the freight. We'll get the promos. We'll get it ahead of time. And it'll sell.
Yeah.
So I think that's just, it definitely helps getting that information and trying to utilize it. You know, sometimes it's not going to matter if we go or not. But, you know, every now and then it will. And you can kind of get ahead of that.
Yep.
I think Terraforming Mars is probably one, right? Like, right. We had played it.
Yeah, and we knew to get
And we knew to get, like,
And we could have gone bigger.
Right. We still were conservative. We sold out within
hours.
Right.
The 10, 8, something that we had.
Yeah.
It was like the Dice Tower weekend, too. Yeah. It was a perfect storm. So all that, but, yeah. So then I think the other major thing we do is we play the games. Like, mm-hmm. I guess that was inherently what you were saying, but we basically, that hall closes, and one of us starts cracking open games and setting them up. I start reading rule books, and somebody goes and gets us food. And yeah. We just start playing. And we just play from 6 p.m. to when I start crying that I want to go to bed. but where you've been awesome is in just putting up that money to get us close. And where we're then walking distance. So that allows me to go to bed earlier than you guys.
Right.
That allows me to be up earlier to be at things and connect with people when it works better for me.
Mm-hmm.
That allows us to get a lot of things and be able to transport them back and forth. And just gives us more time. Because we're just spending the 10 minutes walking to a hotel instead of, okay, we all have to be done at the same time. We all have to load up in the car. We all have to get places. And so we get more time to play games. But last year, I know I said no to like 3 or 4 things because I was like, no, I'm here to play the games so we can talk about them so people know what's coming out.
Right.
Now, obviously, as time has progressed, even in the 5 years we've been going to Gen Con, games are coming out quicker.
Yeah.
In retail and distribution. So we're not really like way ahead of the curve. You know, we're not, oh, we saw it at Gen Con, it's out for Christmas. It's like, we saw it at Gen Con, it's out September 1st. Which is okay, you know? Yeah. I think it's fine. I think what's nice is that it doesn't make people feel like they have to go to Gen Con to get these games. We will have them soon. Mm-hmm. And we can tell you about them. Because if I walk into a store and I say, hey, what do you know about this game? So I go, I don't know, read the back. That's not nearly as exciting as, oh, you know, I don't know anything about the game, but hang on, Brent knows. Or Brian played that and loves that game. Or, you know, or Brian didn't like it, but man, if you like games like Larry does, you're really going to like this game.
Which is everything.
Yeah. But you get my point. So you can have that experience in the store, that knowledge from people. Or if, you know, the people directly in our store haven't had a chance, this podcast is that outlet for people to hear that and at least get my strong, heavy-handed opinion on it. So. I'm a tastemaker, what can I say?
So Fleet Dice.
Woo! Keep pushing that. Cool. So that's kind of the idea of what's happening. What's a game you're excited for at Gen Con, Brian?
Yeah, Black Angel is one that jumps out. I don't know much beyond that it's like Twa and space, right? That's kind of the selling point. And that's just that's been a solid game. I need to play that one again, too. But that one's one I think we can't just say... Like Point Salad's one that's going to be there
yeah,
too, right?
That's true, yeah.
I don't know. Black Angel's the one that jumps out from looking through, though. And that should be one of the branches of the Asmodee booth. So
yeah.
I forget which one it is. It's tough to know which publishing house.
I think it's Z-Man.
But either way, it's under that umbrella.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm hoping that we'll end up picking up a copy and trying it there.
Cool.
How about you?
We're going to get a copy of that.
Yeah.
I'm going to make it happen.
How about you?
That's my big goal. I have to go with Unmatched.
Okay.
So Unmatched is from Restoration Games. I've really been talking it up a lot, so anybody who's been following me Twitter or Dice Tower or whatever, you know, all those things, it's so good. I'm so excited for that game. I think it's really going to make a splash. I hope it does. It's really just what you're looking for. It's a 2-player fighting game, but really it can go up to 4. However, you did excite me when you told me that Reavers of Midgard is now on the list for sale.
It says it on the BGG list for sale, but who knows what that means.
So that would be really exciting, too. I know we store-backed that in terms of that, but if that's there, that's my other one. I got a chance to play a couple rounds of that, and it's solid. I don't know. People are inherently going to say, is it better than Champions of Midgard? I mean, time will tell, but Champions of Midgard is like a great game. So asking for a game to be better than a great game is... But I'm cool with like, this game is amazing and this game's really good. I mean, that's okay with me. Some people are like, why did I play this game if it wasn't better than the last game I played? I don't know. They just keep playing the last game you played. I like the change up of experience, you know, and the players at the table and whatnot.
Oh, Hadara too, right?
Oh, is that going to be there?
I thought so, but I don't know.
Yeah.
And then Master of Respect. You liked that one.
Yeah, that one's good.
That should be there.
Yeah. You're going over my dice deck. Cool. So that's Gen Con, that's games we've played lately, and that's episode 131 of the Portal Gaming Podcast. Brian's still looking through games. Nice. I think that's it. So if you're going to be at Gen Con, we'll see you there. I'll be at the Capstone booth. Brian will be wandering aimlessly or at Trade Day. We're just going to hang out at those tables right outside the hallway and just play games. So if you're around and want to play games with us, that's what we'll be doing. But we're pretty stuck on playing games in a good way. But until next time, I'm your host, The Brand.
And I'm your co-host, Brian.
And we hope you step